magnify or magnify number six.
This evening will be something that will be interesting to you, and I hope that we'll say something that will maybe better equip you to deal with this subject as you have opportunity to talk to different ones about this. Dinosaurs are one of those things that are very fascinating, and it's fascinating to old and young alike, but there's almost always a particular slant with it. And so what I hope to do in this lesson is to give you a little bit of background information and give some framework in which you can deal with this subject and deal with it in a way that will point people in the right direction rather than in the wrong direction. Let me give you a little background information. In 1822, there was a medical doctor, Gideon Mantell. He was an English medical doctor, and he was visiting a patient in rural England. And while he was attending to the patient, his wife was taking a stroll down the road, and there was a rock quarry. And as she walked by the rock quarry, she noticed some fossilized bones that were there. And so she investigated, and she brought some of those back to her husband. Well, after he finished tending his patient, he went out there, and they found quite a bit more. And some were large bones, some were fossilized teeth. And so he took this, being interested in it, and he showed it to one of his friends, who was a French fossil expert. And this expert identified it as some type of hippopotamus tooth and maybe some bones of some type of extinct rhinoceros, although he really wasn't sure. He had not seen anything exactly like this. He showed it to someone else who had done some work in South America and was used to studying iguanas. And he noticed that these fossilized teeth were very, very similar to iguanas' teeth, but much, much larger. And he didn't know what to do. So finally, Gideon Mantell decided to just kind of call this mystery beast Iguanodon, or Iguanatooth, because he didn't know what it was. Nobody knew what it was. It was just some really mysterious, fascinating bones. In the coming years, more and more fossils were found in England. And in Oxfordshire, some huge teeth were found and some bones were uncovered. And as people began to look at it, scientists began to look at it, they determined this was some type of lizard teeth, some gigantic lizard. And so they called it gigantic lizard. Actually, they called it Megalosaurus, which is gigantic lizard. And that's what they thought maybe Megalosaurus might look like in the early days. They didn't have a lot to go on. They didn't have a lot of bone structure. They just had fragments, and they thought maybe this is what that giant lizard would look like. By the mid-1840s, enough of these type of fossils had been discovered that scientists decided that at some time in Earth's history, apparently there was a whole tribe of these large reptilian beasts. They didn't really know what to say about that. They didn't know what to call these. Finally, Sir Richard Owen decided that this whole tribe of huge lizard-like reptiles that lived in the past were some type of terrible lizards, and so he named them dinosaurs, or terrible lizards. And of course, we're so familiar with that term, we've heard it all of our lives. But that was a brand new term that he coined. That term had not been used before. And scientists were just in a buzz about, well, what to make of this? What were these creatures like? How long ago did they live? What happened to them? What did they look like? And so there's just been fascination in the scientific community with dinosaurs ever since. But it's not just in the scientific community that there's this fascination. How many of you as children were pretty interested in dinosaurs? How many of you have children right now that are pretty interested in dinosaurs? So that wasn't just a fad that just lasted, you know, for one generation or so. If you go to the library and go in the children's section of the library, there will probably be, you know, a whole display set up about dinosaurs. Kids love dinosaurs. If you had children that were young in the 90s, you probably know this fellow. No, not that fella. You may know that fella, too. This fella, if you had kids and I started to sing the song, you would probably get aggravated because it would stick in your mind forever. But why was this such a popular educator for children? Because children love dinosaurs. They're fascinated by dinosaurs. And there have been thousands of children's books that have been written about dinosaurs, that illustrations of dinosaurs, movies, cartoons, anything you can imagine. Just some of the things from my house. My boys are just about out of the house now, but when they were small, they liked dinosaurs, and there were a number of different things. Barney was one. But also the Land Before Time series. Any of y'all ever seen this? It's about some young dinosaur friends that find adventure and fun while exploring, and they learn about caring and sharing and all that kind of good stuff along with it. And it's very popular for the time being. Well, in the movie, they had a video series, but it was also a movie, and in the introduction of the movie, it said this: once upon this same earth, beneath this same sun, long before humans, before the ape and the elephant as well, before the wolf, bison, the whale, and the mastodon, in the time of the dinosaurs. That's the introduction. What's the subtle message in that? Who heard the subtle message? Not really so subtle, but what's the message? Yeah, long before man, dinosaurs lived. Now, as your children were growing up, and as we were growing up, our exposure to dinosaurs was almost always in this context, with this type of statement. A book that my children had was a scholastic book. It was in the, series that they had that was First Discovery book series, and the one on dinosaurs. On the second page, the first or second page, it says this: imagine watching TV and seeing someone fight a dinosaur. What do you think? Could this ever happen in real life? What's the answer? No, because dinosaurs lived on the earth long before people. This is the message that our children hear over and over and over and over again. Their very first exposure to dinosaurs is going to be in this context. As they continue to grow up, it's going to be repeated over and over to them. We hear it over and over again, and it tends to make us believe it. I did a survey, and I asked Jim to do a survey here at this congregation as well. The survey we did at our church was just an informal survey. As the kids were walking out, I asked those that were younger than 12 years old, I asked 8 of them, if dinosaurs and people lived at the same time. I said, I don't want you to think about it a long time. Just answer me, yes or no. Do dinosaurs and people live at the same time? 6 of the 8 said, no, dinosaurs and people didn't live at the same time. One of the 2 that said yes said, well, I think so, because I think maybe cavemen saw dinosaurs. Now, these were children that are growing up in homes that are headed by Bible-believing parents that are teaching about God created the world. And yet, despite the teaching that they're getting from home and their Bible classes, still, it is so prevalent, the idea that man and dinosaurs didn't live at the same time, that just their first response to that question was, well, no, they couldn't have lived at the same time, because that's what they heard most. I asked Jim to do that, ask that same question to some of the young people here, and obviously the children here are much more informed than our children. Out of the 27 that he asked, 22 said that yes, dinosaurs and did live at the same time, and 5 said no. I thought that was pretty impressive. Somebody's been doing some teaching here to counter all of the teaching that is done to the contrary in the world. So, let me ask a question. Did dinosaurs and people live at the same time? Well, according to the Bible account, we would have to say yes. When you look at the creation account as recorded in Genesis 1, verse 24, talking about on the 6th day, God said, let the earth bring forth living creatures according to its kind, cattle and creeping things and beasts of the earth, each according to its kind, and so it was. And God made the beasts of the earth according to its kind, cattle according to its kind, and everything that creeps on the earth according to its kind, and God saw it was good. Then God said, let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. What day did God do that? The same day, the 6th day. Verse 31 says, so God saw everything that he had made, and indeed it was good. So the evening and the morning were the 6th day. So it says, well, it doesn't say dinosaurs there. Anything in that that would make you think that dinosaurs could be included in that? Besides just implication, I mean, is there any phrase in there that you can say, well, that could be dinosaurs? Yeah, everything that creeps is going to cover it, isn't it? That's pretty conclusive in the way they said it. Beast of the earth. That's a pretty general term. A lot of things could be included in that. By implication, the Bible teaches that dinosaurs and man lived at the same time. I hesitate to say this, but my wife was telling me that when she was growing up, she remembers one particular Bible class teacher denying the existence of dinosaurs. Do you know why that Bible class teacher, I'm assuming the reason that they denied the existence of dinosaurs was because what?
Couldn't prove it.
All right, couldn't prove it. How are dinosaurs, what means, or what theory is almost always taught using dinosaurs as the principal source of evidence? Evolution. And so it was easier for them just to say, well, I don't think dinosaurs ever existed. I think that's something that evolutionists have made up to try to prove their theory. I don't think, as Christians, that we need to do that. I think that there is ample evidence that dinosaurs did exist. As a matter of fact, what I want to show you in this lesson is not only that dinosaurs existed, but dinosaurs become good evidence for our God and how marvelous our God is. And I think even the scriptures teach that to us, teach us that we need to be using dinosaurs in that way. So, what I want us to talk about is the question is there any evidence that supports the biblical account that men and dinosaurs lived together at the same time? And I want us to look at that, and I want you to become familiar with some of this evidence so that when someone brings this up or you hear something or your children are reading a book and it comes across it, long before man existed in the time of dinosaurs, you can take that teachable moment and you can explain some things and you can be informed enough to get a general idea of some of the evidence that we see. Now, if dinosaurs and humans once walked the earth together as the Bible implies, it's reasonable to conclude that somehow humans would have probably left some record of that. Because dinosaurs are pretty impressive creatures. And so it seems to me that maybe they would have passed down some stories about that. And so we have some record of that in some sense or another. In 2005, Animal Planet aired a very interesting program. As a matter of fact, I saw the other day that it was the second most watched program that Animal Planet has ever shown. Only recently, it was the number one until recently they came out with the new pseudo-documentary that took over number one. Does anybody know what I'm talking about? Anybody guess where I'm going with this? Probably several of you probably seen this. It was a pseudo-documentary. It was displayed as if it was fact when actuality was not fact. But they were showing the scientific plausibility of this argument. Let me show you the opening clip, the introduction for this pseudo documentary. Let's see if this will play.
There is one creature remembered in the legends of almost every human culture that's ever existed. A creature depicted with remarkable similarity by the Chinese, the Aztecs, even the Inuit who live in a frozen land where no reptiles are found. Even they have stories of this animal, the dragon. Cultures from different continents, people who had no contact with one another, yet all of them have stories describing the same mythical animal. Could it be these stories were more than myth?
All right. I don't want you to get too fascinated with that. It's not even talking about dinosaurs. It's talking about dragons. But what's the point that they're making there? Could you catch that just from the introduction? Yeah. Here's something that's so common in human history that's been reported so frequently and so often that they're making the point it makes sense that there must be some grain of truth to this. When we talk about a fish story, what are we talking about when we talk about a fish story? It was this big. When somebody tells you they caught a fish and it was this big, what do you...
They're exaggerating
a little bit there. That's been blown out of proportion. But do you assume that they probably did catch fish? But it maybe wasn't quite that big. I have no doubt that with all the legends about dragons and so forth, that it has been exaggerated, it's been blown out of proportion, and there are things that are not true about it. But at the same time, it's so common and so prevalent that those who study human culture look back and say, you know, is there some grain of truth to this? Is there something in that? Let me read a few things to you. This is from Science Digest, an article that they had called The Spread of the Dragon. And it says, as myth, dragons are the most ancient. Dragon legends have been with humanity since the dawn of recorded history. The earliest dragon-like myths may have originated as long as 100,000 years ago. In Hogarth and Clary's book, they say, 4,000 years ago, sightings of dragons seem to have been almost as frequent as sightings of whales today. You start to look at where are dragon myths from? Does it come from just one area? We normally think of, you know, Chinese dragon legends. But there are legends from Ireland, France, Germany, Italy, Greece, Switzerland, Scandinavia, Ethiopia, Egypt, Persia, Russia, India, Japan, North and South America, every continent in the world except Antarctica has origins of dragon legends. And that's pretty interesting to those who study the human culture and trying to figure out, well, what's at the heart of this? In that same Science Digest article, it says, the spread of dragons, as myth, dragons are among the most persistent and widespread in the world. From millennium to millennium and over all the Earth's continents, dragons and serpent oil shows remarkable similarities. No other creature in the world has had such far-reaching influence on the minds of so many people. Let me give you some common descriptions of dragons from different supposed records of sightings of dragons and then dragon folklore and so forth. Serpentine necks, elongated bodies, enormous tails, hard skin, stout legs, spiked backs, knobby heads, terrible teeth, snake-like tongues, horned or crested heads, sharp claws, membranous wings. Now, if you were just to take that description right there and say, now, what does that sound like it's describing? What creature does that sound like it's describing? What would you call it? If you couldn't use the term dragon, you would say, well, it sounds like dinosaurs, doesn't it? The only creatures we know of that existed that would fit those characteristics would be dinosaurs. And so we're looking at this and we're thinking about, well, how does this all fit together? Let me read a couple of descriptions of dragon sightings. This first one was from Wales, and this would have been back around, I'm thinking it's around 12. It said, the winged serpents were the terror of young and old alike. They were coiled when in repose and looked as if they were covered with jewels of all sorts. Some of them had crests sparkling with all the colors of the rainbow. When disturbed, they glided swiftly, sparkling all over to their hiding places. When angry, they flew over people's heads with outspread wings. Here's another report from the British Isles about the same time. A dragon, vast in body, with crested head and teeth like a saw, and the tail extending to enormous length. And so these descriptions, again, now these weren't reported as some type of legend. These were reported supposedly as actual sightings. There are some respected historians that you've probably heard of that have reported seeing dragons. Herodias, the Greek historian, lived about 450 BC, said, there's a place in Arabia to which I went on hearing of some winged serpents. And When I arrived there, I saw the bones and spines of serpents in such quantity as would be impossible to describe. The form of the serpent is like that of a water snake, but its wings are without feathers, and it is as like as possible to the wings of a bat. What does that sound like? It sounds like very similar to what we often refer to as a pterodactyl. And what they tell us about pterodactyls is, first of all, did you know that a pterodactyl is not related to a bird in any way? They're a lizard. They're a flying lizard, is what they are. That's not that different. You can see how someone could confuse that for a flying serpent, which is what these descriptions were, with membranous wings. Does anybody have any idea how large the largest pterodactyl, there's different classes of them, but the largest pterodactyl wingspan is? Anybody have any guess? 30 feet. There's actually one that they discovered in the last 10 years that wasn't 40 feet. That's huge. What would you think about if one of those came flying over? Could you see why someone would say, a dragon, terrorizing our flocks, and so forth? And so we look at this, and we're trying to compare these legends that we have passed down to us to what we find in fossil records. So what do we say? Well, maybe this is plausible in some way. Why is it that when you look throughout man's history, people from different places and different times, separated by thousands of miles, have all come up with stories of giant reptiles that sound much more like extinct dinosaurs than any other creature that we know of on Earth? Is it just some type of coincidence? It is. But I would say this. We started off by saying, you know, if man and dinosaur once walked together, you would expect that man would have left some type of record, passed down some type of stories of such encounters. I think we have those. And that's exactly what we would expect to find if man and dinosaur did coexist at the same time. Any questions or comments before we move any further? All right. Now, remember something. Up until the 1820s, modern man was completely unaware that there were ever such creatures like this. And so when they were discovered in the 1920s and then on into the 1820s and then on into the 1840s, we didn't really know what they looked like. We'd find a bone here, a piece there, and then finally as more and more bones were gathered and we started to reconstruct some of the skeletons, we started to guess what they look like and this way and that way, it's become more of a science as time has gone on. There's some interesting things that you find in a number of artwork that's been left by ancient man. If you go to Blanding, Utah, the Natural Bridge National Monument, and you go there, you'll see some petroglyphs from the Anasazi Indians were painted on the canyon wall there. And I just want you to look at something. Maybe you can make out what this is. It's not quite as clear, but can anybody guess what that might be? A man. Can anybody guess what that might be?
A brontosaur.
And here's the thing. Again, you look at that and you say, well, I can tell that looks like a man, even though it's a little bit faded in that. And then you look at this other and you say, yeah, that looks not just like some creature. You can even take a pretty educated guess. That's a brontosaurus or some type of sauropod dinosaur. We see that. Now, the question that I have, the Anasazi Indians, this would have been around, they lived in this area, we're told, from 150 B.C. to 2000 A.D., how did they know what a brontosaurus would look like? If modern man didn't know anything about it until the 1800s and haven't really been able to reconstruct and get an idea of what they might look like until really into the early part of the 20th century, how did they know what they look like? Now, I want to give you another side of this as well. Skeptics would say, I don't know if that's brontosaurus or not. As a matter of fact, what skeptics say about this is that what appears to be legs right here are probably just mud stains. And really what this is just a snake. It's just a snake. snake with some type of mud stains that make it look like legs. Well, first of all, looking at it closely upon inspection, most say there's no evidence that there's any mud stains. That seems to have been what was engraved in the rock there and the painting of the rock. Secondly, proportionally, of course, ancient artwork's not always proportional, but that doesn't fit as well. But there are other petroglyphs as well. If you go to the Havasupa Canyon in Arizona, you can see some petroglyphs there. You can see a man up here, and you can see some other figures. But do you see anything that you could identify here besides the man? There's something right there, isn't there? And it looks like something we would recognize. Here's a close-up of it. It looks like something, and it looks like it could be something like this. Something like a bipod dinosaur of some kind. Again, how would these Native Americans know what that looked like? By the way, I don't have a picture of it on that same canyon wall. They have other animals. They have an ibex. They have some deer painted on the wall as well. And they have an elephant painted on the wall as well, which is very interesting because the elephants should have been extinct by the time the mastodon should have been extinct by the time the Indians were there, I think. And so you have that. Also, we're going to talk about this a little bit later on. In the fossil record there, they have a fossilized foot track of a green-toed dinosaur, and they also have a fossilized foot track of an elephant that were there, an imperial elephant that was there as well. So it appears the dinosaur and an elephant both lived in this region at some point, and the Indians who painted these petroglyphs seem to have some idea of what they looked like. And then they were able to accurately draw them enough that we can recognize them today. Here's a temple in Cambodia. And very ornate carvings all over the temple. Do you recognize anything in this carving that would maybe be of interest? Do you see this figure right here? Here's a close-up of that. Can anybody guess what that looks like to you? Looks like a Stegosaurus. Again, time date, around 1000 to 1100 AD is when this temple was built. That's long before modern man knew anything about dinosaurs. And certainly long before they were able to accurately depict what they might look like. How did these Cambodians know what a Stegosaurus would look like? By the way, it's interesting to see what the skeptics do. Skeptics say, well, I think that that's probably a hippopotamus or a rhinoceros rather than a stegosaurus. Perhaps it is. I've not seen a hippopotamus or a rhinoceros with a tail like that, nor with dermal frills like that, but perhaps it is. But that's not what it appears to be. And again, one of the things that's very, very important when looking at a subject like this is we're looking at the very same evidence that the evolutionists have to look at. They are wanting to interpret it very differently. And so they're looking at the same thing. And so what I'm asking you to do is to look at this and what do you see? What do you see there? Without having to explain something away, what do you see there? And in Camarillo, Mexico, there have been a large number of ceramic figurines that have been found there that depict what appears to be dinosaurs or dragons or something of that nature. These have been radiocarbon dated. And it's very interesting, and I'll throw this in here because you need to know something. I doubt anybody this week is looking at the topics. I doubt anybody's talked about isometric dating or radiocarbon dating or anything like that throughout the course of this series. But that's a fascinating study because all the time you are told this was dated at such and such. This isometric dated at this. And we just assume, well, that must be the case. And if you talk to someone and say, it's a very precise science. We can date this, and it's not just one type of dating. We have numerous types of dating that all say the same thing. Well, here's an example of this type of dating. This was radiocarbon dated three different times. One time the results came back that this piece was from 1,100 Second time it was radiocarbidated, it came back 1,640 BC. So a difference of about 500, which that's still within range. The third time was 4,530 BC, which is pretty far off there. The University of Pennsylvania then took it and did a different type of test on it, thermoluminescent testing, and came up with a date around 2500 BC. The problem with all of those dates is that archaeologists are confident that the culture that made these were from around 800 BC. The skeptics don't have near as much problem with their radiocarbon dating and their thermoluminescent dating being off from that. The biggest problem that they have is you've got ancient man depicting a dinosaur in which ancient man was not supposed to know what dinosaurs look like. So do you know what they say? Well, radiocarbon and thermoluminescent dating is not always accurate. You're going to have some variation. I agree. You will. Does that apply towards things that support their theory as well? And so that's important to remember. It's not the science that is so often put forth there as being exact and precise. Now, with these pieces, there are numerous pieces, and they're very stylized. I don't know, you see different things. For instance, here's a bipod with no, it doesn't appear to have any forearms of any type. Here's a dinosaur with a face in the middle of it. And so they're very stylized, very artistic. But again, these are some type of creatures that modern man would say, well, it's dinosaurs, or it depicts dinosaurs. Ancient man shouldn't have any understanding of and knowledge of it at all, but apparently they did. Now, here's something else. This is very interesting and somewhat... I'll tell you what I know about this, and you can take it from there. Inca burial stones, been around when Spanish explorers came over, they found them all the way back in the first, when the conquistadors came over, took some back to Europe and so forth. So the Inca burial stones have been around for a long time. They depict a lot of things about ancient Inca life, daily events, things of that nature. However, there are a number of stones that have surfaced that have creatures that, well, what does it look like? It looks like a guy getting eaten by a T-Rex or some type of dinosaur like that, and something else over here. I don't know exactly what it is. Here's another one, and this one just kind of has almost all of the dinosaurs. You got your pterodactyl up here, you got your triceratops, your stegosaurus. Looks like some type of brontosaurus or something over here. You got your T-Rex right there. I'm not sure what that might be. Seems to just have them all. Here's the difficulty. There's no way to date these. And there have been a lot of replicas that have been made. And it's difficult to tell the replicas from the original. And so naturally skeptics say, well, what you have here that represent these type of things, here's a man riding a triceratops, those are obviously fakes. Well, what makes you say they're a fake? Because there's no way that ancient man could have known what dinosaurs look like. That's not a good reason to label a fake. However, there probably are some fakes, because there are a number of replicas, and it's very difficult to distinguish the originals from the replicas. And so this is probably not the strongest evidence as far as from the skeptic. The skeptic is just going to write it off. But it is interesting, and it would lend us to believe that some of these are originals, because there have been records of such engravings for a long time before dinosaurs were discovered. Any questions about ancient artwork that depicted dinosaurs before we move on to the next section? All right. I think maybe some of the most convincing evidence that man coexisted with dinosaurs is found in the fossil record itself. Y'all are probably familiar with the geologic column. The geologic column is the explanation of being able to date different fossils by what strata they're found in. And it makes sense from this standpoint. In your lower strata, this is going to be way down on the Earth's surface, you're going to have your older layers. and then that's covered up by a newer layer, which is covered up by a newer layer, and so forth and so on. And the explanation that's given by evolutionists is this takes millions of years, hundreds of millions of years. And so as you dig down through the Earth's surface, you're going down through millions of years of layered rock. So, if you find a fossil, and it's down here in this layer, we know it's really, really old, because it's found so deep. If you find a fossil that's up here, well, it's relatively young, because it's found in one of the earlier layers, or the later layers, I should say. Dinosaurs are going to be found in the Triassic and the Jurassic period, about 150 million years ago. You'll find that number vary some, but around there. Modern man, according to evolution, only about 2 million, less than 2 million years old. It's going to be found up here. Separated between modern man and dinosaurs is about 60 to 65 million years. So there's no way, according to the geologic column as it's defined by evolutionists, that modern man could have, or a man could have ever seen dinosaurs. That would have been impossible because there's 65 million years in between. In Glen Rose, Texas, in Dinosaur Valley State Park, they have some of the best preserved fossilized dinosaur tracks. In other words, at some time that was a big muddy area. And dinosaurs walked across it, and the right deposits were in the mineral content there that covered that up. They were able to fossilize those tracks there. And so you can find hundreds of dinosaur foot tracks that are fossilized in the rock there. However, in that same strata, which would come from the Jurassic period, when dinosaurs, we find this fossil. What would you think that we might be? I don't really, it's kind of a funny looking footprint, I guess, but I don't know what else it could be other than a human footprint. Now, if you find this in the same rock layer that you find dinosaur foot tracks, what would that indicate to you? That they coexisted. Because that impression had to be made at the same time, while the mud was still wet, that dinosaur tracks made. And so they would have had to coexist. Now, if you were a skeptic, what might you do with this? You got any guesses?
Evolution explained
away. Try to explain the way. What explanation might you give? Mistake? All right. Maybe it's a fraud. Maybe somebody carved it. And that was the matter of fact, every time that fossilized human tracks are found alongside dinosaur tracks, the first thing that skeptics say is these were carved. And there probably had been something that had been carved. With this particular one, the charge was made that it was carved. And so there's something that you can do with it. You see this thin line, if you're sitting in the back, you may not be able to see it, but there's a thin line right there. There's also one right there and a couple across the toes right there. What they did is they took a cross-section of this. When you take a cross-section, then you can look at it and you can see the density of the rock to see if it was compressed or whether it was carved out. It was compressed, so there was a track. Now, the first cross-section that they cut was right back here at the heel because that's where the most force was, and so they would be able to see the density whether it was by compression or whether it was carved. And so it was obvious that it was an impression, that it was not carved. So then the skeptic said, well, probably what happened is there was some type of track there, and then they carved the toes in it. And the rest of it make it look like a human foot track. That's the reason we have the cross sections here as well. Guess what they found in those cross sections? It was made by impression. It wasn't a phony, it wasn't carved. So then you just have the skeptics going, well, we don't really know what to do with that. And that's the case. That's the case. In 1987, in Robledos, Mexico, as I mentioned, Jurassic period. In Robledos, Mexico, there was this fossilized track. This one is really clear. What is it? It's a human footprint. It's a human footprint. Smithsonian Magazine ran an article about this in July 1992, and they labeled this particular track, problematica. And the reason that they labeled it problematica is because scientists don't know what to do with it. Because not only is this found in a strata that they did not expect humans to live in, this is found in the Permian layer, which is a couple million years before dinosaurs were even supposed to exist. So now you've got humans, according to this evidence, existing before dinosaurs supposedly existed. Here's the point I want to make about the geologic epoch. This is a theory. In theory, if evolution were true and it took millions of years and each of these layers were made, it took millions of years for each of these strata to be formed, then what you would have is you would have your simple fossils here, you would have your complex fossils here. Would you ever, even once, ever have a complex fossil down here? Ever. What do you think? Not without the flood. All right. Evolution. I'm talking about evolution. According to the evolution geologic column, evolutionary geologic column, would you ever have a human footprint down here? No. You could you? It would be absolutely impossible because humans never, ever, ever existed down here. They only existed up here. Now, according to the biblical account, would it be possible for you to have a human footprint down here? Yes, it would. Because these things were made all within the same week, weren't they? Now, here's the thing. Jim mentioned the flood. Now, I want to take just a second. I hope we have. No, we're not going to have time to deal with that. With the flood, there's some interesting things. When you have sedimentary deposits, you're going to have certain things that settle to the bottom first. Are seashells going to settle to the bottom before a floating mantle? If there was a worldwide flood? Yes. And if you have a large amount of sedimentary deposit collecting very, very rapidly, then what you're going to have is you're going to see difference. Generally, you're going to see certain type of fossils down here, certain type of fossils here, and certain type of fossils here. That would make sense. But in evolution, you would never see a human footprint bring down here. And so that's the reason science says it's a problem. We don't know what to do. This doesn't make sense. In 83, human footprints were discovered alongside dinosaur tracks in Turkmen Republic. Similar fossilized tracks have been found in Virginia, Pennsylvania, Kentucky, Illinois, and Missouri, and Jurassic strata. Quick look at the Biloxi River there in Glen Rose, Texas. There are hundreds of dinosaur tracks on this riverbed. This particular set of tracks is called the Taylor Trail. It was excavated in 1972 by Stan Taylor. There are 134 dinosaur tracks, and there are 14 tracks that look like what? It's like human foot tracks. And as a matter of fact, in some cases, these cross and overlap. You have the three-toed dinosaur track, and then you have one of the human tracks overlapping that on that particular situation. In evolution, impossible. There's no way that would happen. According to the biblical account, this is exactly what we would expect to see. We would expect to see this type of evidence, and we find it. All right, I'll mention one other. This is called the Alvis Delic fossil because of this. This is relatively new. 2008 is when this was uncovered. There has been some initial scans and tests done, and it seems to be legitimate at this point, but I'm not going to wholeheartedly support this or recommend this because it may be a bone. We don't know. But everything so far that I've read seems to indicate that this is probably genuine. But it's the same type of thing that we've seen in other cases where there have been extensive testing done. All right. In the time that we have remaining, which is not much, does the Bible say anything about dinosaurs? How many of you have ever gone to your importance and looked up dinosaur in the Bible and found the word? I don't know of any version of the Bible that uses the word dinosaur. And this kind of makes sense, at least in the English Bible, for this reason. When was the word dinosaur first coined or first used? Mid-1800s. King James, English version, was first 1611, a couple hundred years before the word dinosaur came into use. And so you wouldn't expect to find the word dinosaur in the King James Version. Anybody use the King James Version in here? All humans. Okay, all right. Now, you're going to find in the King James Version the word dragon or drag some 20 times in the Scripture. It's translated from a word that is an intensive form of the root to elongate. And Strong's defines it as some type of marine or land monster, sea serpent, dragon, sea monster, serpent, or whale. So he gives a pretty broad definition there of the possibilities that it could be. In most modern versions, it will say serpents. So possibly the Bible talks about dinosaurs by using this particular word. But turn over to Job chapter 40. Job chapter 40. We're going to rush through this very, very quickly. Look at verse 15 of Job chapter 40. I want you to notice the word. Job 40, verse 15. Now look at Bealon, which I made along with you. And then it goes through and describes Bealon. He eats grass like an ox. See now, his strength is in his hips. His power is in his stomach muscles. He moves his tail like a cedar. The sinews of his thighs are knit together. His bones are like beams of bronze. His ribs are like bars of iron. He is the first in all the ways of God. I believe if you read from the King James, it says he is chief in all the ways of God. Only he who made him can come near him. And it talks about his diet and so forth. Just look at how it describes him here. He's not threatened by man. He lives in the marshes. He's not threatened by rushing water. Does anybody have a study Bible that gives a footnote that tells what Behemoth may be? A hippopotamus. A hippopotamus. All right. And some say an elephant as well. Some study Bible. All right. Does a hippopotamus eat grass like an ox? As far as I know, they do. Do they have strong thighs and hips? Yeah, elephant or hippopotamus could go with that. Power in the stomach. Yeah, they got big stomach. Moves the tail like a cedar. You seen a hippopotamus tail? Yeah. Elephant tail is a little bit longer, but I wouldn't say a cedar. Does it make sense that maybe it's describing something like this? Particularly, look at this. All right, first of all of these, I think, would fit. Bones like iron beams. I suppose a hippopotamus or an elephant has strong bones. So maybe that's using that in that sense. But when you consider something like a sauropod dinosaur, and look at the scale there, look at these people, and you start looking at bones like that, that's impressive. And that's the purpose of what God is telling Job here. This is an impressive and awesome animal that God had created. And he's not threatened by man. Well, you can understand. Oh, by the way, he's first in all the ways of God. The King James, he's chief. That may have the idea that he's the greatest in the sense of size. Look at the scale here. Here's a human. Here are some of the sauropods, dinosaurs. Gigantic. I don't know this from study. I don't know if they lived in marshes or not, but I notice there's an awful lot of pictures that depict sauropods living in the marshes. I don't know if there's some scientific study of that or not. Not threatened by rushing water? Well, I suppose that he'd probably keep his head above rushing water. Maybe that's what it's describing. I think there'd be evidence for that. Continue on in chapter 41. In chapter 41 it says, can you draw out a Leviathan with a hook? Does anybody have a footnote? A footnote on Leviathan? Crocodile. Describe the crocodile. And I can see this to some degree. Look at some of the characteristics. It says it cannot be conquered or tamed by man. He has large teeth and scales. Seems to be indicating that he's pretty fine. Strong neck. Makes pointed tracks in the mud. Able to stir up the deep. Could it be talking about some type of dinosaur creature, some of the dinosaur sea creatures that we see, such as the Pliosaurus or the Plateosaurus? It seems to fit a lot of the description that we could look here. First of all, these things were huge. Both of these different types of dinosaur-like sea creatures were 40 to 50, 60 feet long. And you look at that description of Leviathan there, and part of the point that he's making is, we can't do this. Can man conquer a crocodile? The Egyptians, some of the earliest Egyptian records talk about hunting crocodiles, killing crocodiles. But the point that's made here is whatever God is describing to Job here is not conquered by man. Man doesn't go and throw a bridle on it or kill it. Harpoons and spears don't seem to touch this animal. And it talks about a strong neck. Here's Plateosaurus. Here's the skeleton of Plateosaurus. You see his teeth there as well. Able to stir up the deep. Talks about making the water look like it has white hair. Can you imagine something that's 60 feet long or something like that? Ferocious like that. What it can do in the water. Here's the point that I want to make. God made everything the priest going to be according to Biblical. Do dinosaurs fit into that view? And the evidence is yes. The evidence shows that they do. The evidence shows that man and dinosaurs coexisted at the same time. We see that. Here's what I want you to remember about dinosaurs. They have been the poster child. They have been the tool that has been used so often to promote evolution. But what God is saying in Job, if that is talking about what we would call a dinosaur, what God is saying is, look at the magnificent creatures that I made along with you and how great they are. What does that say about our God? He's a great God. Now, I hope that we can take that and use it. Thank you for your good attention.